Hello and welcome to Season 4 of the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
This podcast is all about elite distance running in the UK.
We're here to give you all the latest news updates around the sport,
as well as weekly interviews with athletes and coaches.
Stay up to date by following us on Instagram and X at Sunday Podcast.
And make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel too, where we post athlete workout videos, shoe reviews and more.
Thanks for listening, and as always, we hope you enjoy the episode.
Okay, hello, welcome back, guys. Today we are joined by special guest Matt Stonier. Matt's returning to the podcast. I believe the last time we had you on, mate, was just after the Emsley Car Mile, before you kind of had your big breakthrough. I think Matt called it on the intro to the pod as well. So look, a lot has happened since then. But firstly, mate, how are you?
Yeah, cheers for having me back. It's been a while, to be honest. A lot of stuff's happened since then and now. But yeah, no, I'm not too bad. I'm enjoying the Olympic season, Olympic fever, and especially now the athletics is underway. It's full swing of sofa season, really.
Yeah, class, mate. Look, we're going to chat about some of those events that have been going on recently. But first, we wanted to kind of chat about obviously yourself and your own running just for a little bit, mate, because obviously, look, we hoped you'd be out there in Paris. I'm sure you did too. Do you mind just telling us and the listeners kind of what's been going on the past sort of, I guess, 6 months? Is that right?
Yeah, it's been a bit of a car crash, really. Since kind of, obviously, Eurocross was the last time I ran. Well, I wasn't even pain-free there, but essentially the week before Eurocross, I just started getting a bit of a sore knee. Nothing crazy. I'm never really too badly injured. It was a bit sore, but then I was tapering into that week, so I was wasn't really running much, so I wasn't getting much worse. And I knew I was in good shape, obviously, from Liverpool, which feels like years ago now. But and then kind of that weekend Eurocross, just like my knee and then like quad was just all a bit like dead. I was getting physio on it, and I was like, it's tight and stuff like that, and they treat it, and then 10 minutes later, it feels exactly the same. And I thought something's clearly not right. But I raced, and then, yeah, just couldn't really walk. Like afterwards, got a scan. Turned out I had a femoral stress response. So that was 8 weeks. But then I still ended up going to Poch in January, which in hindsight is probably one of the worst decisions I've ever made. Didn't really enjoy it at all. Obviously, you're surrounded by all your professional athletes, which as mates is great, but obviously you're seeing everyone compete and train and everything. And I was kind of, I only got to there on crutches and left on the Altergy. Ended up getting ill and stuff there. So that was a bit of a car crash. And then got back from Poch for a follow-up scan. And turns out that my stress response was actually a stress fracture, which had been missed in the first one, or didn't come up. Was what I was told. So that 8 weeks turned out to be much longer. So that ended up being about 15. And then headed out to Poch in April again, because I was playing a bit of catch up. Obviously I missed half of winter, but I know I can get fit pretty quickly, and I knew I was in such good shape pre-Christmas. So I kind of still had a bit of belief for the summer, and thought I'm going to have to kind of catch up by going to Poch and then St Moritz. And yeah, got back from Poch, which went well, started running, got a couple of tempos in, started getting dropped by Ben at like 5:40 pace. Managed to get down to 5:20s once I got back to Loughborough, and then headed to St Moritz. And yeah, my shin gave way pretty much. And I think I've mentioned it before, but yeah, I did my first track session of the whole year, and the day after, got woken up at like 6 a.m. just this like throbbing pain in my shin, and headed to the doctor and got a scan. And yeah, that's where I was also a grade 2 stress response in my shin on the same leg, the right leg. So that's ended up being, well, it was meant to be 6 weeks, but it's taken a bit longer, unfortunately. I had another flare-up last week, so I've not run for a week. But honestly, you forget how much you take just being healthy for granted. Those little things, I'm sure you guys will know. I find the funniest one is when I'm walking to lectures you've got to cross a road, the main road in Loughborough, and there's traffic lights, and like they'll be turning red, and normally you just run across the road, and like just not being able to run or not being able to get the bus or a train if it's leaving the platform because you just can't run. But hopefully I'm on the upward trajectory. I mean, it can't go much lower, so that's how I'm viewing it now anyway. But yeah, sorry for that.
Man, no, it's rough. It's tough to hear. And I think it's good that you know, you do share that with people as well. What obviously you're recovering and stuff. Will you look at training at all? Like, do you think anything was causing these issues? Obviously, I guess the second one, maybe that was a little bit, you know, you're rushing to get fit for the Olympics. And looking at the team and stuff, you think you would have, you know, that third spot definitely would have been up for grabs.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the first one, the main one, the FEMA, everyone, if everyone knew what was going to go wrong, no one would get injured in the first place. So it's always easy looking back on it. I think I probably got in my head because I knew that Euro Cross was my last age group category race. I'd messed up the under 23s in summer and I was like, I just have to medal. I've got to medal. And I think I probably hit late September, October too hard. And especially because off the back of off season last year, I broke my hand as well and had to get surgery and that. So I had a slightly longer off season. So probably we went a bit too hard. And that, I think I paid the price. I also think the cross country, I think I probably wasn't conditioned enough to go through Cardiff, Liverpool and Euros kind of not back to back, but within a month of each other. So that's probably the kind of area I can look on that one. And then I think, yeah, I think just going to Poch in January just totally delayed my recovery. I think because I was still doing cross training and everything, because I think a lot of people agree when you're injured, you almost have a week of feeling sorry for yourself and being upset. Then you get this newfound motivation and determination to hit the cross training hard, something new. You're getting better as it goes along. And then you kind of could go well at that for a bit, which is kind of where I was in Poch. And then you get back and you're like, why have I just killed myself cross training for 4 weeks when I should have just gone on holiday? So I think the recovery's been, I hit probably the first recovery too hard, but I don't want to use it as an excuse, but I was also under the impression it was a stress response. So I was training for an 8 week rehab as opposed to a 12 to 16 week rehab. And then, like I said, the one in the shin, I think going to Poch again in April, just the extra heat and the altitude, you using so much more energy. And even though you think you're replenishing your stores and everything, sometimes if it's 100 calories a day for 3 weeks, it all adds up, you know?
That's an interesting point. I mean, because when people are injured, especially stress fractures and stuff, your body's pretty much at its lowest point. But it does seem to be commonplace. You know, you see these amazing stories, people cross train like animals, you know, 2-3 hours a day, and they come back fit than they've ever been. And some people put their performances down to like, I got injured and I was able to improve all these little things. And that's why I've come back stronger. But yeah, in your case, it sounds like that wasn't the right thing to do and you just needed to rest. I almost take that approach when I hear people with stress fractures. It's like, is it better just to let things really heal? Because often you see, you know, how you've had two back to back, it's often the way, isn't it? If you get one, like there's another one not too far away if you're not careful.
I think I was definitely, obviously with it being my first kind of major injury and everything, I was definitely a bit unaware of the risks of returning from one major injury, which obviously I had. And I was slightly upset. I felt a bit, I could have done with more support from people who had maybe experienced it before or kind of had been through it. I was kind of led a bit unawares, like realistically shouldn't have gone to Poch in January, should have been told, let's not do that. Probably shouldn't have gone in April. There's a couple of things I should look back on now. It's obviously easy to say. But then I think my other point was I still believed after the FEMA that I could make Paris. Yeah, so for me, it was almost like let's try. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, for me this year, it was either like a Paris or bust. I'm not running anyway. If I'd not made the Olympics, I'd have still been down, having not made it. So I think I wouldn't change me trying to make it. Obviously, it's impacted and gave way to another injury, but I don't regret. And looking back now, I still don't think I'd have changed it because you never know. You might get away with it and turns out to be a different summer, but easy to say now.
100%, mate. I think like you'd all have always have looked back if you didn't try and think, oh, maybe I could have made that team. Like especially watching the trials and things like that. But like, I guess the good thing now is that it's a like you mentioned, no more under 23s for you so next year to kind of rush for. It's an off year. Maybe you fancy Grand Slam track, who knows? But yeah, so it's an off year and you've got loads of time to get yourself back on it. So we obviously wish you all the best going forward. But mate, let's get into some of these Olympic races because I'm
Go
sure
on,
you mentioned Ben. Maybe we'll just get onto that first then. Do you guys live together or are you just pretty close in
no,
Loughborough?
we've actually never lived in the same house, even
Okay.
though I feel like I spend more time with him than anyone, just predominantly on camps and just training. But it's quite nice. Then it, I get fed up of him, he gets fed up of me, and then you get your own space.
Awesome. So yeah, mate, let's get into Patterson's race, and obviously we'll chip in as well. But mate, he looked supreme, didn't he, this morning?
He did. Yeah. We saw his Whoop recovery from last night and thought, yeah, he's gonna do well today. He's mid to high 90s, so he's definitely gonna be in for a good one. But he just looks like sublime. I think he backs himself so much in that last 100 over anyone. I think I genuinely don't know, apart from Sajati, if there's another finisher in the world at that 144, 145 pace coming off the bend. Like he's just got it nailed, and it's horrible for everyone to watch because everyone thinks it's so late and he's coming from so far back, but it's a tactic that works for him, and he's pulled it off again. So I think I'm gonna say he looked the best in the heats alongside Sajati and Arap. I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, I mean, Sajati did look bloody good. Yeah, but I would agree with that. I thought Hopple, he was someone I was really banking on. I don't know. Yeah, he was looking around a lot. I don't know if that was from like confidence wanting to ease down or just struggling a little bit. He didn't look that impressive the last like 50 for me. But I just want to know as well, like, what communication you having with Patterson? Like, are you able just to text him like mates at this stage, or is it too far gone? Like, when do you kind of cut the kind of nonsense?
He's very good. Ben's very good at locking in, but he also locks out very well. And I think sometimes we can be that point of contact where it's more of a joke and a laugh. Like I said, have you seen George at all? I know you'll probably go on to the five. And he was like, nah, what's happened? I'm like, mate, come on, switch on. Like I just sent him a clip on Instagram of everything. But no, I think we try, and if there's any way I can help Ben, just if it's calming him down, sending him memes or chatting about something like stupid, then I'm here to help. Obviously, I can't do much more than that, but he's locked in, but he's still got a life. He's still chatting to people. I'm sure he's still chatting to his family and Coach Dave and Molly and everyone. So, yeah, he's. I don't know. I just have a weird feeling.
And I was going to say, have you been surprised with, because I think sometimes when you get a bronze medal at the Worlds like he did last year, he's been able to take it up another notch. Has, like, from what you've seen, has his training or anything changed? Has his life changed? Because his life must have changed after that world medal. But he's managed to just, again, go up another gear, I think.
It's just not, he's not missed a beat this year. Like, I don't think he's missed one session, one easy run. He's so good at the consistency part. which obviously Josh Kerr obviously prides himself on as well, and Ben's just nailed that this year. Honestly, if you came to a Loughborough session from October to December and saw Ben, you'd think this guy's awful. But he just throws his ego away up until January, puts it in a box, leaves it to the side, and he just cracks on and he does everything 8 out of 10. And then you'll just get murmurs of this, like, slowly coming out the box, December on the track. On the grass, he'll admit he's awful. He's at the back of the group. But he just, each week in on the track, he'll just be one person in front. And next thing you know, it'll be December, and he's in the front group with you, and you're like, this guy's an 8 guy, and he's running 435, 440 mile splits, and it just comes out of nowhere. But it's such a slow build, but I think it works perfectly for him, and I think that's partly why I've got a funny feeling, because I don't think there's anyone in the 8 who's able to run a 15 or a 5, maybe Elliot, but able to run a 5K as fast as Ben can. And I think with these two heat semi-final being as hard as they are, I think that'll pay off in the later stages.
Yeah. You mentioned you got a funny feeling. Any particular colour? Is that a feeling? Or?
Yeah, for sure. I think, I think Sajati is a level above at the moment. He is. Mm-hmm. That last 100 is something silly, but I just think if positioning into that last 100 on the final, if Sajati gets it wrong by half a second, there's people there to pounce on. And I don't want to write off Arop. He's the world champion, like, for goodness sake, and Kinyamal and Wanyoni. But yeah, I think a lot of it's going to come down to positioning. And if the positioning's correct, I definitely see a trip to the medal ceremony.
Yeah, these 8 semi-finals were just, I mean, the 8 heats, I think the 800 semi-finals are going to be absolutely stellar because the depth is just there. You mentioned a few names, you know, you've got the Kenyans as well, Wanyonyi. I thought Atui of Spain looked really good as well, 2 out. So it's just, the semis are going to be absolutely stacked. Patterson aside, we can pretty much, say with confidence he's going to be in the final, we hope. We don't want to jinx anything, but what about Bergen and Giles's chances? Bergen looked good. Do you think he has that extra gear to kind of go through to the final?
I thought they were both brilliant today. I've got to hand it to them. Like, it is obviously Elliot with the, you know, the late call up, and obviously it'll be a bit of a whirlwind to just turn up and get through. I think a little way that will actually be a little bit of a success for him. I don't want to belittle his ambitions, but I think was really important for him today. I think Bergen, just because he doesn't race much, you never really know, but hopefully this race will bring him on a bit more for the semi. And I think they've both got really good chances. I think they're going to have to run tactically really well to qualify. But again, I think they can be there. I think the races are going to be 143 races, and I do think they're both capable of running that in a tactically perfect race and on their day. So I'd love to see all three of them, at least hopefully Ben and another. But yeah, I guess we'll find out. I think it's 50-50. I don't know what you guys think, but
times. You think, I mean, the heat's quick. I mean, quite a few 144s and lots of 145s as well. There was no real kind of pedestrian heat. So you think it's going to take like a 143 to get through? Do you probably fastest loser spot 143?
Yeah, unless it's really tactical, but I just think the quality is going to be so good. I'm not sure. There are quite a few kickers in the 8 this year. Yeah, Atui, Ben, Sajati, Tuau. So that might slow it down a bit, but then all it takes is Arop to go through in 50 point, and it's going to be a 143, 142 race. So a lot can happen. I don't know what Bergen, or I think Bergen and Elliot might both want more of a 144 race. I think they think that might bring them into it a bit more, but I've got to back the boys. I think they, there's always a possibility in the 8 as well. It's anything can happen. So fingers crossed.
I think that's the thing with the eight. That's the good thing and the bad thing, isn't it? Anything can happen. So it plays people into it, but also counts against them. Matt and I were just talking kind of off air kind of before we spoke to you, mate. How kind of maybe for Giles, actually, he's come into this in a great position, like no pressure, because everyone knows he's missed his preparation. So maybe that's better for him. And I actually thought, guys, that Bergin did really well to get through, despite being, I think he got clipped like twice or had to kind of, he was checked twice, which we know with 150 to go and 800 is never good. So I actually think he must be in pretty good shape to be able to kick off that after kind of stumbling and having his stride checked. So I definitely maybe say Bergin is a lot more to come.
Yeah, I hope so. It's just the quality of the athlete. I think the only thing that might go against them is their ranking. I don't know how they're seeding the semis, but obviously Bergin has got quite a tough world ranking. I don't know if that will play any part into it, which might not help him too much. And Elliott's kind of mid-pack. So that might be one thing that slightly hinders them, which would mean them both beating a so-called finalist favourite. So we'll yet to see it. We were discussing earlier, I don't know what you guys think of, like the 800, one of the hardest finals to make. But once you make that final, one of the best medal opportunities, just because of the only eight guys and so much can change tactically and within the race, it's definitely one of the hardest finals, I think, to make.
100%. You know, it's always been the case. And I think that's why, you know, when we're thinking about Bergin and Giles here, it's like, I don't think they can afford to put a foot wrong. Whereas I think Patterson can maybe, he can make a couple mistakes and still qualify just because that last 100 he's got. Whereas Giles and Bergin need to be so on it. Positioning needs to be 10 out of 10. They can't afford to get clipped, etc. And I think they might be able to sneak through if that's the case. But we saw in the women's as well, like with Ricky and Gil missing out. Like, but in the final, you're like, they would have matched up really well in that final. Yeah. Like they're not worse athletes at all. So I mean, that's the men's 800. Good to get insight from Patterson. I think just one thing I wanted to say on Patterson's training, you know, that really slow build. I guess 800 runners do have that luxury a little bit. Whereas, like, are you envious as a distance guy of that? You know, like for you, you're definitely someone who enjoys the cross. You're very good at it. And will you kind of structure your season differently going forward, looking at the kind of track being the pinnacle?
I think my cross country days are very, very numbered, if not over, at least for now. I just think when I see some of the way the guys train now, and like realistically, apart from maybe Jakob, who does a Eurocross, like none of the top 15 guys are really putting that much investment into it, and it's just more of a risk factor now, especially being out of the age group category. I'm not really going to be in a position to medal at a Euro cross. As I've always said, it's my favorite GB event I've ever done. It's my favorite event on the calendar. Looking at the bigger picture, track is obviously more important, and I just need to structure things slightly differently. I think part of my luxury is I do enjoy the winter training. I feel good doing it, and I get fit quite quickly. So I always find myself running well, and sometimes when you're too fit, you're capable of more than you should be doing at that time. Whether it's just running, you know, a couple of seconds quicker for an 800 in training than you should be, it kind of all accumulates, and I think that's kind of what's worn me down the last couple of years. Generally, you miss some sort of training at the turn of the new year. I think the most important thing is, I mean, Keely's proven that this year. You can't miss a beat, really, from January onwards. Mm. Up until January, you can kind of not go with the flow, but take things slightly easier and just stay within yourself. But from January, it's, you know, full gas. And I just want to be in a position come January where, like the others have done this year, is hopefully not miss a beat. But easier said than done, we'll see.
Easier said than done, man. Yeah, go on, then.
Let's get into these 5Ks then, because drama this morning on the 5Ks. Look, should we start with Mills? What do you two think? Because he certainly wasn't happy. He's through, so it doesn't really matter now. But what are your guys' thoughts on the incident?
I think it was nearly 50-50 in terms of them both going at each other. obviously, because Mills has fallen, he looks like the person who's been impeded. Although I do think they were both impeding each other too much. I think neither of them, I think Steve Cram said in comms they both were in the wrong position and shouldn't really have been battling that far back anyway. But my biggest pet peeve with all, and I've said it for quite a while now, is with these people falling over, whatever, and getting put through to the final, I don't know how people can be reinstated and put through to a final if no one's getting disqualified. If someone's been impeded, then that person has to be disqualified for someone else to go through. If you're not disqualifying anyone and people are still going through, then surely that's what you just class as, in F1, as like a racing incident. I don't really see how, because it's become so common recently, people just are falling over, getting put through, and there's no policing of it. And I know no one's falling over on purpose, but at the end of the day, that's the sport. Like that's what happens. You put yourself in that position. Nordas went to the front to avoid that. He's worked harder to get to the front, but then he's avoided that. But then guys who are behind him, who have taken their eye off the ball, are getting put through, spending less energy. And I know they deal with falling over, it might hurt and everything, but it's ending up not being fair for the guys that are qualifying on merit. So that's kind of my verdict on it. If I was in that position, it's probably different, but I don't know what you think.
I mean,
Well, Mo Ahmed's not been put through, has he? And you
nah,
could
it's
probably
so good.
argue, is his any different? Like, yes, it's earlier in the race, but again, if you're saying no one's at fault, like you're saying, Sonia, Mo Ahmed not through, so
He was, I'm pretty sure he fell a lap to go, did he, Stoney? I'm pretty sure, yeah. Like,
yeah.
and it was all starting to hotten up. I haven't seen Mohamed's replay like that much, to be fair. It looked like he got clipped from behind anyway, and like just completely. And you just knew the way this race was panning out, though, you knew it was going to be carnage. I mean, you mentioned about, yeah, people getting like racing incidents and stuff. I mean, cycling, you know, when they all have a big tumble, like that's it, it's game over, and it's just unlucky. But yeah, in our sport, like they're just the amount of people now who are just getting bumped into things happening time and time again. I personally think that no one should have been bumped up, and that, like you said, was just a pure racing incident. And you've got to be careful, and you can't be like, you know, leaning into people. You can't be pushing people because, yeah, things like that might happen.
I could totally see where George is coming from a frustration anger point of view. He's obviously going to feel like he should be put through. But it's more a finger at the officials and the way it's run of, okay, someone may be angry, but you can't, I don't know if you can just give in to them, and you've got to stand your own ground at some point. I just think it was very 50-50, and I do think they were both giving it to each other,
You're
and
right though. They've I think they've got to play the race out differently if they don't want that to happen. Like, don't let the first 2K be outside 6 minutes and stuff. And you know, the second heat was pretty much the same, but they got things rolling a little bit further out, didn't they? You know, 2K to go. By the way, Jakob looked absolutely class. In my opinion, bouncing back after that 15 the night before as well.
I do have to say, Kessler in the 800 to get through
Ah,
after last
same here.
night. I think it's got to be harder going from a 15 to an 8 because you just shouldn't have the legs to kick like that. Obviously, for Jakob and Nordas, it's a bit more strung out. The lactate's not as high. I can see it being a bit easier, but that's got to be the most impressive performance of the day for me.
You make a good point. And mate, numbers in the race, like as an athlete, if you saw 21 guys line up in the 5K, is that World Athletics, or the, you know, I'm pretty sure they decide, not the Olympic Committee, is that them fucking up? Because it was it, that they used to have heats of 18, I think, you know, two of 18 maybe, or they should they have three of 15? But like, and there was people who didn't start. You know, Ongren didn't start. We know that Chepsgon and Kiplimo didn't start. So technically, there was going to be 22, 23 guys in each race.
Yeah, well, if you're going to have such kind of gray areas on interferences, people falling over and everything, then you can't have that many in a race. That's the simple answer. Like, you then got to make it so spread out and so few numbers that basically no one's falling over, and it purely is on place and position and times. But yeah, you can't. It's been happening so much more recently, and I think part of the reason we've seen a lot more falls is because they're just throwing so many people into these races. But yeah, it is hard. I think the caliber is so high now that there's so many people who are capable of being at the front as well. I think maybe in 4 or 8 years ago, Mills would be in a position there where he's coasting along because half the guys are out the back. But at the moment, everyone's so good and everyone backs themselves that it's so congested near the front. But yeah, it is something you've got to adapt with now. It's happening in every race, not just in the major champs, happening on the circuit as well with people being in races. You look at, I mean, Laros, for example, has fallen at the last two races and he clearly learned his lesson, and he was straight to the back in all those 15 rounds and came round the outside as kind of safely as possible. So he's clearly learned his lesson, and Mills obviously kind of didn't quite or wasn't able to put himself in a position to avoid it. So yeah, it's a shame, but it's made for good viewing and good entertainment. I can't lie.
Yeah, it has made for good entertainment, and I wonder if they will seed Mills and Hugo Hay next to each other on the start line for the final. That'll be entertaining as well. But of course, we've got more guys. Yeah, we've got more guys in the final now as well because of those reinstated. So that's going to be another busy one. You'd expect though that, like you said, it was going to be a bit more strung out in the final because they won't let it go so slow. Let's talk about some of the omissions from the rounds, because we've lost Bressier, we've lost McSwain. Unfortunately, Paddy Deva didn't get through. We've lost Mohamed. In the other heat, we've lost, just to make sure I get this right, Morgan McDonald's gone. Race is gone. Brian Fay, yeah, I'm getting on to that kid. Grijalva's gone. Ben Flanagan, Abdi Nuer, Michelle didn't start. And of course, you mentioned Cheptegei Kipalino, like we spoke about last night now. But yeah, Sam Atkin, not the racist today, was he?
I said something earlier. We were doing that. I said, he can't be picked for another major champs again. You can't. It's just
unless he qualifies legit. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give him that. But I also don't know when that's going to happen because you've got to turn up. I think if you asked every athletics fan to name all the endurance people, men and women across the team, like, no one's naming him. People don't even know he's there. Like, there's no social media. I don't think I follow him, to be honest. There might be, but there's nothing like giving off any vibe or sense of like achievement or I'm going out there to perform. Like, this guy's run sub 13. Yeah, I'm one of the big guys. I'm gonna turn on. I'm gonna get involved. It's just such a shame to see. Like, I know people. There's all the people fuss and stuff about people making teams and stuff. It just feels like he's taken the opportunity for granted. I just don't think you can take an Olympics for granted. You just gotta, like, at least Paddy, you see him on the front trying to get stuck in. He's done all the qualifying races. Mm-hmm. George is absolutely gutted. He's fuming that he's thought he's not made it. And it's just great to see some passion and emotion, have how much it means. And I personally don't get that from Sam.
Look, I mean, obviously, we saw what happened to Whiteman. Whiteman unfortunately suffered, you know, another injury, his hamstring, and they've had to call in Giles. And I think, you know, with Whiteman's incident and then now Atkin as well, you know, let's not forget Atkin didn't do the trials because he had that medical exemption. Is this now just like a lesson to BA going forward, whether they'll take it as a lesson or not, that like medical exemptions when you have a trials probably inside 4 to 5 weeks from the major championships, it shouldn't be the case. You shouldn't be using medical exemptions because especially, I mean, I was worried in a 5,000. I mean, you can maybe miss a few days if you're training for an 800 and a 1500, right? Maybe if you can rely on your speed, but for 5K, like, to, if you actually are ill or injured and you've missed, you know, a week or two of training, like at that level, no chance. You know, you talk about that consistency. And I think this was just another example of like, we shouldn't be giving medical exemptions out, because if you can't get to trials, which is 4 weeks out from the championships, you're clearly in a bad place, which means you're not going to turn out
like 4 weeks. I have a lot more sympathy for Jake, partly because I know he's been in St. Moritz. I know Ben was there. So I know quite a bit of the training he's been doing. He's been working hard and he was in good shape. And, you know, you get a bit more out of him. His dad's obviously come out and spoken about it. So whereas, because you just don't hear anything from Sam Atkin, and it's all quite more secretive and he's not really here and no one's really seen him or whatever, so you don't really know what's going on. Like you said, the whole medical exemption that was so last minute comes out of nowhere. So it's almost a bit more, it's just harder to understand and kind of have a bit more sympathy and understand from their side. Okay, if he came out and said a few things that have happened, then it might be easier to understand. Someone else may, he may have dropped out and maybe Jack could have been called in, but you just don't seem to hear much much from him, and it's just harder to kind of get on board with someone as much like that. And Jake's such a good member of the team, and he's great to be around. He brings good positive energy and everything. And yeah, I'm not saying everyone has to do that. That's not everyone's personality, but it does help when you're trying to follow someone and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's just a bit of transparency, isn't it? Like you say, mate, it's just people want to know what you're up to, and with good reason, because you're taking someone else's spot, not because you can't be secretive about your training and concentrate on yourself. But if you're not showing up to a trials, people want to see some reasons why you are getting picked, you know?
Oh yeah, no one would begrudge Sam if he turned up to trials or come out and said what had happened, because he has run the times he's run. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't take that away from him. So I think a lot more people would understand if a sub 13 guy went and he just had a shocker on the day. He's had a slightly tough build up, but they've gone for him because of the times he's run. Then you just go, look, at the end of the day, you're an Olympian, fair play, didn't work out on the day. Like, no one's shouting down Molly Caldery for not qualifying. Like, everyone knows what she's about, what she's capable of, and just didn't work out. At the end of the day, she's still gone to the Olympics and given it her best. But you just don't get the same feeling and vibe from Samak, and that's the only thing I'd say.
Yeah. Just never really got stuck into the race, did he? No.
We won't over talk on that one. Mate, I think I just wanted to mention as well, like, you know, some big names went out in those 5K heats, and Grijalva being one, like a 12:50 guy. Like, it wasn't just Atkins who's had a bit of a stinker, you know. Grijalva, I don't know if he's been injured or what, but that was a massive shock to see.
I really like him as well. Like, I think he runs with such passion, and obviously it's nice to see a lesser known country always up there, and especially anyone who ever comes fourth, you're always going to back them a bit more next time, because you kind of want them to step up again. So yeah, it's a shame for him, but again, you also don't know what's happened behind the scenes, or you never know, he might just have a bad day. But yeah, he'll definitely be gutted, I'm sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then just before we finish up, then, man, I mean, try and predict that 5,000 meter final. Go on.
Jakob, I think he wins. I don't know. Gebrewet and Krop. Nordas look good. But I think it will be a quick race. So I think a couple of the...
Can Grant Fisher come back, get another one? Or is it
I don't know about the five. Yeah. I think he might have a fourth place or fifth place in him. But yeah, after that performance, if you've got anything left, fair play. Mm-hmm. I think Jakob will win, though. I hope he does, actually.
I think he's 5,000. He is just a dominant 5,000 meter runner, isn't he? And then actually, you know, you being a 15 runner, what did you make of that final? Were you surprised, or did you kind of expect it?
Yeah, I think everyone was fooled by the Jakob and Josh show. And obviously that's down to them, the way they've hyped it up, the rivalry they've created. Everyone's been so focused on those two, which is fair enough, being the athletes they are, that everyone just kind of didn't really pay attention to Hocker. And I actually think in the race, that's probably would be my takeaway, is Josh and Jakob were so concerned about each other and kind of just had eyes for each other that they didn't even consider the rest. And obviously the confidence they have, they think they're so much better than everyone, which they are better than most, that they kind of just didn't pay any attention. Jakob clearly went out a little bit too hard. I think after that 400, I know some other people said as well, I just knew he wasn't going to win. Like, and then I think Josh obviously just saw the back of Jakob's head and said, "You ain't going anywhere, mate." Mm. Just tried to stick on it. Whereas Hocker just paced it so much better and just came through. And I think Josh said he ran the race of his life and he PB'd a national record, and you can't take anything away from that, but he said he ran the best race. I just wonder if maybe he'll look back and go, I was so focused on Jakob, could I have not run that first lap in fifth or sixth and then move forward? But it's so easy to say watching it back. And I think if you told Josh you're going to run 3:27 in a national record, are you going to be happy with that? I think he'd probably say yes. And at the end of the day, he still beat Jakob, which he's still correct on that side of it. He's still better than Jakob. So I just didn't see Hocker being able to run 3:27. I thought in a 3:30 race, 3:29, 3:31, he could be a real danger. But yeah, when that door opened and he came through, it was like, is this actually happening right now? So I don't know. What did you guys think of it?
Oh, we loved it, didn't we? We absolutely loved it. Well, it was similar to you, mate. I thought, yeah, if it's 3:28, even 3:29, I thought two horse race completely. And just, yeah, like you say, even Jakob trying to hold off Kerr on the outside. If he doesn't do that, Hocker couldn't come up the inside of him. So then Hocker's got to go round. And I actually think if Hocker had to kind of step out and go round, he wouldn't have won it. But Stez was saying he still thinks he would have got it just because he was just on it
I think he actually is the best 1500 runner in the world right now. I mean, and that result last night proved it. And I think basically, I mean, Stonia, you may agree or disagree with this, but unless everyone lines up in Monaco, you actually don't know how fast anyone can run. And like Hocker is an example of that. He ran 3:30 after a couple rounds at US Champs. That was like 5 weeks ago. If he'd improved since then, you know, he probably could have run faster at US Champs as well. And I think with Jakob, you always know where he stands because his cards are always on the table. Whereas other athletes, even Nagus and people like that, and Kerr obviously barely raced going in, you don't know how good they are. And Kerr, I think, actually wasn't as good as what he was bigging up. I don't know if you agree with that, but you know, he was kind of, the way he was talking was like 3:26 is not a problem for him. And that might be the case in a Diamond League, but in a major championship, that's a different ballgame.
Yeah, it's so hard to really know, like you say, what shape anyone was really in apart from Jakob. Yeah. But then even then, it's slightly kind of exaggerated because of Monaco and the pacing and the wave lights and as he says and everything. I, as good as they were, I still don't know if I could have seen Oka running that time. I could have seen him doing that. If you said that was the result, what was the race won in? I'd have said 3:30. So I don't think I'd have ever been able to predict that. And yeah, I think Josh will definitely look back and go, oh, could I have just, maybe not yet. And obviously can't take anything away from him. Like, but I wonder if there will be any kind of, not regret, but just a what if. I don't think Jakob can really think what if there, because I don't think he could have won that race. I just didn't see it happening. But I wonder if, I think the only other person capable of winning that race yesterday was probably Josh, which says everything about how good he is. Mm. Yeah, it's still crazy to see like another Olympic record at 3:27 in the final, like, was it 6th, 7th place coming in 3:30? Or even, no, was it Gourley 3:10?
Gourley was 3:30 and he was 10th.
Yeah, 3:30. Like, it's just another ball game. It's another level of, is everyone stepping up. Like, I think Steve Cram said on comms, you ran that race 10 times, you get 10 different results, and I don't think it's too far wrong.
Well, you've got to go.
I do. at some point, yeah, I do got to go to the golf course.
Literally, it came into my head and I was like, yeah, he said he got to go at 3, so we'll
let him go. I said if Ben wins, all three of us will get You've Got to Go tattoos.
Where's yours going to be? What size?
As discreet as possible, like on the pinky, like in the tiniest font you can find it. But no, and I think when he qualifies for the final, I think I'm going to have to try and You've Got to Go myself to Paris. But he's chosen a horrible date, the final night, with it being all the finals left and the most expensive evening.
What are we looking
at? If you could have chosen like tomorrow night or something, it's just a bit cheaper. But No, it's so selfish. But
I think you could be looking at, I think last night there were still some tickets for like the category A, which are like 900 euros. But you could be looking at a cool £1,000 to get yourself over there. But I think it'd be worth it. Hey, look, think of it as like
Nike not sort you out so if it goes wrong.
Yeah, I mean, if he wins, he should be paying for your night out as well. So you can maybe get it back when you're celebrating.
Last time when he won his commies medal. And he was like, yeah, big night or whatever. He had a total shambles and just couldn't get up for it at all. He just crashed massively. So hopefully he's got a bit more in the locker if it goes well in Paris. Surely you can't let yourself down in a night out in Paris. But we'll have to see.
There we go. He's a lightweight.
Absolutely. Well,
yeah, considering he's not drunk for the whole year.
As he is, yeah, I mean... I guess he is just dialed in, isn't he? That's the level. That's the level. I shouldn't be shocked by that.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Well, look, Stonia, thanks for joining us. Oh, actually, quick, just before we sign off, Reveille, Walcott Nolan got through that repechage round in the 15s as well. So more good news on the British side. Let's just hope that repercharge isn't in our legs kind of come to semi because we have seen a bit of,
I think Georgia and carnage in those. Get into the final pretty comfortably, which should be a good final again. But
but awesome. But look, Stonia, mate, we'll let you crack on and go to your golf afternoon. But mate, do you want to shout out your podcast as well?
Yeah, go on then. If you're still listening at this point, then you probably quite like the new pod on the block. You've got to go with myself, Ben Patterson, the guy we've just spent 30 minutes glazing, and Luke Nuttall, who's also heading out for the Paralympics in the end of the month. So
go give it a listen if you fancy. It's a better version of Coffee Club with more successful athletes.
Well, after their performances in the Olympics, after they're on Fraud Watch, so hopefully you can put in some better ones.
Oh, yes.
There you go. That's one way to sell it anyway. But yeah, cheers, Stonia. thanks for listening, guys.